Well, then there would be some different kind of an experience. The session today, Centering Prayer, probably comes about as close to the heart of the contemplative experience for a Christian as anything that I know. And I want you, by all means, to begin by thinking that what is going to happen is going to be very gentle and very easy. It will not involve work on your part. It will involve being with God for a couple of periods of time. Each of the sessions that we've had in the whole area of spirituality has begun with a brief 5-minute period of practicing the present. And that it means practicing the present moment, and it means practicing the present of life from God. And we have a very simple way of doing it, and in sharing this with you, I would hope that it provides the essential framework for any kind of contemplative or meditative experience that you'd like to have. It involves, first of all, since we're a group and we're not all in this in the same way, it involves the simple commitment that for this period of time you will close your eyes. You may or may not want to participate. You may want to move out of it when you get into it. But if you'll close your eyes and keep them closed for the entire time of this 5-minute practice, that will ensure you privacy. It will reduce distraction. And I will be looking at the clock and down at the table when I do have my eyes open. And starting now, I will not be looking at you. So you will have that privacy. You will not be being watched. So if you'll begin by closing your eyes and sort of wiggling yourself around into a position that you feel you can hold relatively comfortably for 5 minutes. We'll start. And we enter into the present, the simplest way of all, by breathing. And we do that because breathing is always done in the present. It's an anchor, if you will, that holds us into the present. And by paying attention to it, we move away from our yesterdays and tomorrows that bother us and that entice us in so many ways into the present moment. So we practice the present for now by simply being aware of our breathing. Don't change your breathing pattern. Don't try to do anything artificial. Just sit and listen to and feel your breathing. And whenever any distraction comes, just take a look at it. I'd suggest today that you smile at it and return to your breathing. gradually move back from your attention to your breathing and allow your eyes to open. That's different from open your eyes. Allow your eyes to open. It's amazing how they'll do that on their own. In a discussion a couple of days ago, which I'd like quickly to review, one person said, "I wish we had more silence in worship." And everyone nodded assent to that, until finally someone in the back of the room said, "Yes, but there are always children at worship and noise." If I were able to ask for a room to practice centering or practice the present, to experience silence, I would ask that it be a room just like this with other sounds coming in. Because that's the way life is. There are always sounds, there are always distractions, there's always the thought coming in, the physical feeling, the temperature of the room, a particular aroma or something, it's always there. The closest that I've come to silence is in having an auditory test by an audiologist, where you go into a completely sealed room. And even there, the audiologist is saying, "Tell me when you hear such and such." Life is not like a closed room like that, and our interiors are not like that either. The silence which we seek for contemplation, the silence we seek for centering prayer, the silence we seek for meditation is a silencing of our judgments and a silencing of our responses to all of these distractions and all of these thoughts and all of these feelings. So when a particular thought occurs, a particular pain, a particular pleasant sensation, a worry that comes or something, we just simply look at it and say thank you. Be aware of it. If it's anger, be aware of it. Don't turn yourself from it. Be aware of it. And when you are clear about what it is, then perhaps a little half smile. Maybe you want to picture yourself hugging it and then saying thank you and letting it be and returning, in this case, in this practice, to your breathing. It's that silencing within us of what would judge what's coming. Oh, I'm a bad person because I'm not able to concentrate on my breathing. No. We want to silence that. I know where I've got to be this afternoon and later, and sitting here probably isn't getting me well. Okay, welcome it, thank you, or okay, a little half smile, an embrace, and return to the breathing. That's the silence that we're talking about. That's why we could, if we were to teach each other well, we could have more silence in worship. It wouldn't be an absence of noise, but it would be an absence within us of judging the child's cry, or judging the too hot or too cold room, or the hard pew, or what the pastor said in the sermon, or what have you. Just a silencing of response or reaction. Okay. Any feedback? Any experience that you had in that 5 minutes that you'd want to share? Because we're all very interior in this experience, and maybe if something came to you or a question about the practice came, you want to just ask it or share a comment before we go on. Robert.
There's a couple of things that I've been experiencing during these moments. One is that my breathing slows down considerably without even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that if one listens to the noise, like if you listen to Paul Hanson, it gets louder. Okay, vary the. The other day when doing it, the verse started singing this rhyme. You could sort of cut out Paul Hanson and bring in the birds, or cut out the birds and bring in something else.
You better take ministry too long.
Anyway.
When you get to where you're bringing in and letting go of the birds with one ear and Paul Hanson with the other ear, then I'll agree with Jan, you've been in tape ministry too long. Thank you.
I can understand every word he says if I want to.
And what needs to be silenced inside is that feeling of, oh, I wish he'd stop talking so that I could have silence. No, you see, that's music, what's going on over there. That's a sound of the earth. Anything else before we go on? Yes.
Well, I practiced this before, and going what Robert said, touched off, I just came in from Holden Lake, and on the way up, I was listening a lot to my breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was loud, for one thing, but also because I was getting in touch with its, you know, with the value of that, the joy of that, too.
If you go walking, you can do this by being aware of the swinging of your arms or the touch of your feet on the surface. If you go biking, you can be aware of your feet pedaling, just going around, and just focus on that. You want to watch out for the cars occasionally, but to do that. One of the things that I enjoy watching is John Wright in the morning cleaning the jacuzzi. And he has this long wand with the vacuum on the end, and he brings it up move by move by move. And I talked to him about it one day. I said, John, Zen could make a field day of that. The Zen of cleaning a jacuzzi. Being aware of each movement of the wand. And he said, it's the highlight of my day because it is such a graceful movement. I just become aware of that as I'm doing it. And that's the beauty of practice. He's practicing the present. He could be doing that in order to be done with it so that he could go and have breakfast, in which case he would not have really been alive during that period of time, you see. But by being aware of it, he was alive in that moment. And that's what we're talking about in practicing the present. Anything else? Okay, we've got some interesting stuff to go through here if you haven't done centering prayer, so we want to get into that. Centering prayer is, first of all, very ancient. It's not a new gimmick. It's certainly something that predates the New Age. It goes back into the monastic tradition, and it is the way of being with God in the depths of one's being in a relatively nonverbal, relatively non-rational way. I say relatively because nothing that we experience is absolute. Everything that we do has a mix to it. So a relative non-verbal kind of prayer. We're all verbal prayers. Our Father, our Mother, Abba, Ima. Now I lay me down to sleep. Come, Lord Jesus, be our guest. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. We use words almost always in our prayer life. And when we're not using words, we don't think of ourselves as praying. But when we look at our lives, there are all kinds of times when we are with someone non-verbally, when we are loving someone, when we are helping someone, when we are just simply holding someone or being held, or when we're just quiet together and saying nothing, when we're with a pet, just petting a dog or holding a cat, looking at a bird. It's helpful sometimes to look at a mountain and realize that what we're doing then is a kind of nonverbal thing, because usually we're not into talking to mountains. Not that we can't, because we've been doing that a couple of times in the last week or so. Centering prayer is rooted in the trust that being together with God can include words and no words, thought and no thought. Just being. When we are asleep, we are with God. There is nothing, right, that Paul says, nothing can separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. Nothing. Not even the absence of words. Contemplative monks, and I think of two who are certainly teachers to me, and both are Cistercians, which are more popularly called Trappists, and whose lives, for the most part, are lived in contemplative communities where they work and pray and work. They worship in the cloister, they worship in the choir, and they worship while doing electrical work, they worship while doing tape ministry, while doing the many announcements and welcoming people that have to be done, while doing geology, while walking, while washing dishes, and so forth. It becomes a single life. The two Cistercians that have most influenced me have been Thomas Keating, who was an abbot of a Cistercian abbey in New England and now is in Denver and teaches centering prayer, and Basil Pennington, who is by far and away the best known and most popular teacher of centering prayer. And I'll be glad to go over those names with you later, so you can just kind of float with that. We'll come back to it and we'll check quickly at the end. Thomas Keating and Basil Pennington. And what I want to do today is to share with you particularly Basil Pennington's method. He has two principal books. One is called Centering Prayer, and the other is called Centered Living. And he has a very simple guide for doing it. But first of all, we want to be careful not to be intimidated by centering prayer, because the contemplatives, when they do it, just sort of automatically say, well, you really should do it twice a day for 20 minutes each time. Now think about your day. When would you do that? Admittedly, we could, but our lives are not structured in that way. So let's not frighten ourselves and say, well, if I can't do it 20 minutes a day, twice a day, then what's the point of experiencing it here
Islamic
in
law.
This hour, just very briefly? Henry Nouwen says, take 5 to 10 minutes a day and listen to God. Just listen. That seems to me a little more accessible. But now we've already done 5 minutes, see? And when listening to our breathing, we're listening to God, the rush of the spirit wind in and out of ourselves. So if we have 5 minutes in already, okay, we'll keep score. Basil Pennington says that the introduction to centering prayer is to sit relaxed and quiet. And we're not going to do this quite yet.
And it had another.
The procedure, to sit relaxed and quiet. And then to be, and the strange use of the preposition here, be in faith and love to God who dwells in the center of your being. Be in faith and love to God who dwells in the center of your being. Now, you can do that in any way you want to do it. But we're going to come back to a very helpful little procedure. So that means becoming quiet in some way or another. And usually it will help to close our eyes and or have them half closed. That's another meditative technique. Just sort of let them be half closed. Or have a half smile on your face. That's another very helpful way to be present. Then all of the teachers of centering prayer say, take up a love word or a prayer word. We're going to do that in a minute. And let it be gently present, supporting your being to God in faith-filled love, a prayer word. And we'll come back to that. And then third, and this is a little like that 5-minute practice we did, whenever you become aware of anything, gently, simply, perhaps by saying thank you or by smiling at it, I find thank you most helpful for myself. Return to the Lord with the use of your prayer word. And then it ends by letting the Lord's prayer pray itself. That sounds strange, but it's like letting your eyes open by themselves. At the end of our two practices this afternoon, I'll begin praying the Lord's Prayer very slowly, and you can join with me, and that will conclude that particular session. Now, what I'd like to have you do, if you will, is to just sit quietly and comfortably, relaxed, and allow your prayer word to come to you. Simply receive it. What is a prayer word? Jesus, Abba Ima, Father, Mother, peace, shalom, love, thank you. Let the word simply come to you. You needn't judge it. You can change your word anytime you wish. But for this experience coming up, let this word come to you and then use it, whatever it is. A word that connects you to God. Our first experience is going to be 5 minutes in length, and I will introduce it to you in the words of Basil Pennington. First, be in faith and love to God who dwells in the center of your being. Imagine God's Spirit gently picking you up and taking you into the center of your being where God dwells, wherever that seems to be. And now let your prayer word come. Let it be very gently present. And follow your prayer word to God. Imagine each time you say your prayer word, imagine it connecting you to God. Each time you say it, your prayer word touches God and touches you and connects you. And whenever in the next few minutes you become aware of anything, whether it's a voice, a sound in the room, a physical sensation, a thought, a fear, a pain, simply become aware of it. Be very gentle. Go back to your prayer word and allow your prayer word to reconnect you to God. Thank you. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. That's a 5-minute introduction or a brief practice of centering prayer. I kept it brief so that we can come back to a slightly longer one in just a few minutes. But first of all, any questions, any reactions, any problems with it? How about a prayer word coming to you? Were you able to receive one? Anyone want to share their prayer word?
Well, yes. This may seem strange, but patience is one.
Patience?
Patience.
Strange. No, it doesn't sound strange at all. Anyone else share their prayer word?
Jesus was comfortable for me.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I want to make very sure that I am keeping up.
One way to keep that out is, of course, the fact that you are centering, engaging in prayer, which is centered in God, who is our God. Anyone else? Prayer word.
Water.
Water. Water. Water. Very interesting. Water is such a connective thing, isn't it?
Yeah, whenever I really want to feel connected to God, I usually go to a spot where there is water.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, that's such a powerful word. Sometimes I use that. It's so powerful. Yes to the distraction. Yes to the noise. Yes to God. And yes to God. Mm-hmm. Yes and yes and yes again. Yes, thank you. Anyone else have yes? Lisa.
I changed my word. I usually do Jesus. I changed it to praise.
To praise. Praise you. That's another one, isn't it? I mean, they just keep coming in, these words that are filled with power, these words that connect us. It's like the Jesus prayer. You continue to repeat Jesus over and over again until it simply prays itself in your heart, and you don't have to do it. Just there. And then every once in a while, it comes back up when you need it to reconnect. Praise you. Yes. Water. Jesus. Remember, what we're talking about now is called centering prayer. It is a classic form of Christian prayer. It, in every case, follows approximately the same dimensions. One becomes relaxed and quiet. One becomes present to God in whatever way one wants to do it. Some may wish to hold their hands up. It's hard to do that for a long period of time. But maybe to hold their palms up, or something, some open expression of openness or connectedness. Maybe it's a folding of the hands. And then allowing the prayer word to come. It's not always going to be the same. For Lisa, it changed from Jesus to praise you. For you, it's water. That's a beautiful prayer word. Every word is beautiful, every prayer word that connects us to God. And then the third thing is, whenever we become, it's such a positive thing. Instead of saying, notice that Pennington does not say, whenever you are distracted. Pennington says, whenever you become aware of anything, simply, gently return to the Lord using your prayer word. It's not, that way you're not fighting something all the time. And you don't have to call whatever comes an interruption or a distraction. And then you conclude by allowing a prayer to arise within you. And what I'm doing is simply doing the Lord's Prayer. And the second time we do it now, I invite you to join with me in doing that very slowly at the end. Luigi?
I have a question about that, because the longer I used the prayer word, the more vivid a picture became inside of me. And I didn't know whether that was something that I should let go of, or if that was the prayer taking place, that picture.
I would say that's the prayer. It's not even something you have to let go of at all. You just allow that word to take you where it will. Maybe it takes you to itself, but God is in all words. Before we go back into this, and the next time we do it now will be just a little longer, and we'll keep within our time frame, I want to share with you a couple little stories again out of Anthony DeMello's storybooks. These all have to do with prayer. Sometimes we use prayer, most of the time we use prayer to get what we want, or for very selfish reasons, and we try to manipulate God into what we want. So listen to this one. The master never ceased to attack the notions about God that people entertain. If your God comes to your rescue and gets you out of trouble, he would say, it is time you started searching for the true God. When asked to elaborate, this is the story he told. A man left a brand new bicycle unattended at the marketplace while he went about his shopping. He only remembered the bicycle the following day and rushed to the marketplace expecting it would have been stolen. The bicycle was exactly where he had left it. Overwhelmed with joy, he rushed to a nearby temple to thank God for having kept his bicycle safe, only to find when he got out of the temple that the bicycle was gone. It's a little like this story about the pious lady who, after the war, said, God was very good to us. We prayed and prayed, so all the bombs fell on the other side of town. The Emperor Akbar was out one day hunting in the forest, and when it was time for evening prayer, he dismounted, spread his mat on the earth, and knelt to pray in the manner of devout Muslims everywhere. Now, it was precisely at this time that a peasant woman, perturbed because her husband had left home that morning and hadn't returned, went rushing by, anxiously searching for him. In her preoccupation, she did not notice the kneeling figure of the emperor and tripped over him, then got up and without a word of apology rushed farther into the forest. Akbar was annoyed at this interruption, but being a good Muslim, he observed the rule of speaking to no one during prayers. At just about the time that his prayer was over, the woman returned, joyful, in the company of her husband, whom she had found. She was surprised and frightened to see the emperor and his entourage there. Akbar gave vent to his anger against her and shouted, "Explain your disrespectful behavior, or you will be punished." The woman suddenly turned fearless, looked into the emperor's eyes, and said, "Your Majesty, I was so absorbed in the thought of my husband that I did not even see you here, not even when, as you say, I stumbled over you. Now, while you were at prayers, you were absorbed in the one who is infinitely more precious than my husband, and how is it you noticed me? The emperor was shamed into silence and later confided to his friends that a peasant woman who was neither a scholar nor a great teacher of religion had taught him the meaning of prayer. This is a sort of almost a Twilight Zone one. A contemplative member of a community, male or female, was walking in the monastery gardens one day when she heard a bird sing. She listened, spellbound. It seemed to her that never before had she heard, really heard, the song of a bird. And when the singing stopped, she returned to the monastery and discovered to her dismay that she was a stranger to all her fellow sisters, and they to her. It was only gradually that they and she discovered that she was returning after centuries. Because her listening was total, time had stopped, and she had slipped into eternity. And just one more. When the master invited the governor to practice meditation, and the governor said he was too busy, this is the reply he got. You put me in mind of a man walking blindfolded into the jungle and being too busy to take the blindfold off. And when the governor pleaded lack of time, the master said, it is a mistake to think that meditation cannot be practiced for lack of time. The real reason is agitation of mind. I find that true for myself. It's not a matter of time. So my mind is too busy with things. I have the time. Now this time, we're going to go about 8 minutes. So we're going to follow Pennington's procedures. If you will sit relaxed and quiet, close your eyes. That always helps. And first, in whatever way you wish, be in faith and love to God who dwells in the center of your being. Remember, we're not looking for a perfect state of being. Just face God with love. Let your heart face God. Let your heart be a mountain of love facing God. And then take up your prayer word and let it be very gently present in your heart, supporting your being present to God in faith-filled love. And whenever in the next minutes you become aware of anything, then very simply and gently take up your prayer word and let it return you to your presence with God. Thank you. Abba, Ima, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Families with young children are practicing centering prayer with their children. We didn't do it. They're 30, 27, and 24 now. I wish we had. I wish I'd known about centering prayer then. Another thing, prayer in community takes on additional power. There is an energy that develops when you are with someone else and praying, and particularly in centering. And if you're not able to be with someone else, then invite that person in your spirit, through your spirit, to come and be with you as you pray. Ken Bakken, who was here last week as a teacher, he is a noted physician and healer, spiritual healer and physician in Seattle, written several books, a very interesting person, says that after a group of persons have been in a room, it is now possible to come in and, using very sensitive instrumentation, to get some idea of whether there was tension in the room or tranquility in terms of just simply the electromagnetic presence in that room. The place itself takes on power. When you choose a place for centering prayer, choose it carefully and return to it. It becomes a power-filled place. The place itself enhances your praying. Maybe it's a favorite chair. Maybe it's a special room in your house or some place where you can be quiet, relatively quiet. And as you continue to use that, it takes on a residual power that is friendly to you. That's strange talk, isn't it? It's strange to me. But when I heard Ken say that last week, I thought to myself, that's right. We can feel things in a group. My own sense today was a feeling of peace. And I became aware. One of my awarenesses was of us being together in here and being present to God. And I felt sort of supported by that, like water to float in. Any reactions?
I was conscious of it being a practice that's essential to wholeness in a similar way to physical activity.
To physical activity, yes, of course. Because it's an activity of our one being.
Mm-hmm. Or the stillness of it.
One can use certain exercises, as we did, Di, this morning with the youth, those simple Chinese stretching exercises with hands up and down. And it's the same thing, isn't it? That's what you're saying. It's that it's us as persons that we're doing that, and it's us as persons that are praying. We are one. We can't divide ourselves up. What we do in silence is what we do in noise, is what we do in motion, is what we do in stillness. It's us. Thank you for that. Other experiences.
I that I find myself fighting about that. I feel like the amount of time actually spent centered seems so minuscule because my brain will flip off here and it'll be minutes before I catch it. Or I will have already covered four books or written a couple of pieces or something in my head before recentering or noticing that I've even written it.
Now, would anyone here care to say to him, oh, gee, that's never happened to me? Of course. And then what one simply does is to embrace that. And the less we fight against that, the more our centering and our silencing within grows, and we simply become aware of things. Di?
I know for me, like, we did centering today in the middle of the morning, and it was really hard for me because it was in the middle of my day to get centered as I am now. And I know you're in the middle of your day still. And I found that it took a little bit longer and there was a lot more things running through my head. But it was sort of like taking a nap. I mean, just a few minutes is refreshing to go on. And yet at the end of the day, you know, my day's over for right now. And it's much, much easier to relax and get deeper in, I think, the return to you. So, I don't think it's unusual at all.
If you don't know Diane, she is responsible for Narnia. And when she was there this morning, she was there as a responsible leader. And it would be very difficult, I think, to center because you have an agenda that's going on there. And you have an agenda. You have things that's coming up tonight. Anyone else? Yes, Chuck, you were, and then Lisa.
I changed my word from touch to touch me.
Oh.
Just almost immediately in the second meditation.
And that did? What was that experience?
I guess I just felt I needed help.
Oh. Now help is a prayer word, isn't it? It really is. Help me, Lord. Or have mercy, touch me.
I saw that creation picture, you know, the touch.
Lisa?
I was just going to comment on something that, I'm not sure what Dave or Diane. When you had talked about the water or something, I started thinking of it more, that you saw the image of it, and I guess something that I've been struggling with is I've been trying to practice this for like a year and a half or something like that, and I've been trying to find the word that helps me and the word that I stay centered with because I finally get off from so many distractions. And when I was first taught, I was taught the word is important and that it shouldn't have much meaning, because as you you know, put on your word, if you mean something to you will go off into a distraction and you will start making it something instead of just let it be a word that symbolizes to you your intent toward God. So that, you know, as you're doing it and distractions come up, the purpose of the prayer is just to intend your whole being toward God, to attend toward God, instead of kind of get off into the realm of, you know, water and the image and increasing and caught up in the image and you're floating away.
Thank you for that. Herbert Benson at Harvard University, who has written the Relaxation Response Method, has come back now, and one of the most interesting things that's happening is that he began by teaching what was called the Benson Relaxation Response Method, and his teaching was take any number, say from 1 to 9 or whatever, and just repeat that number, or simply start and say 1, 2, 3, and when you become distracted, go back to 1, or if you're going to use a word for centering, just use the same number, for example, 1, 1, 1, because the word didn't matter. The beautiful thing for us as people of God is that we know that all words are part of the word. So it doesn't have to be necessarily a holy or pious or biblical word. Any word is a part of the word. And we can trust that and celebrate all words. And if you find that it's helpful to use a word that doesn't have a lot of images, like one or three, then feel free to use that word. Anything else? Mother?
My prayer word was love. Love for God and my love for God and God's love for me.
So you could feel it both ways,
mm-hmm.
flowing from you to God and from God to you. You know, I never dreamed that I would be doing this in the presence of my mother. Chuck?
I use words in two different ways. If I am impatient and want to improve my patience, I use that as a word or something like this. But then the other thing that I try to do is just empty. I kind of look at it as a vessel that there's a spigot at the bottom, and I have to open that once in a while to get the crud out of the bottom. Otherwise, all the fresh thoughts are coming in the top and just spilling over. So I have to open that spigot once in a while, which doesn't mean anything. It's just emptying.
My reaction to that is, when you do that, I would hope that it would not leave there and become tailings that are despised, but just simply allow it to flow into the heart and love of God. All that's there, that's collected, just let it go into God and be there. I try to picture more and more God's hands holding the tailings here, and God loving what has become to many a curse on the valley here. So I hear what you're saying. I can really appreciate that. We get filled up with stuff. Margaret?
People need to think of the tailings. If there were ever a fire, they're a secure place.
I thought of that today.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, how does a helicopter land?
On the tailings?
Land without that?
Right.
I mean, they don't have to be something bad. There are good things to it.
Thank you. On my run this morning, I thought, where would I go if there was a forest fire? And I finally mm-hmm. thought, I'll go up on top of the tailings. If I get there quick enough. Anyone else? Thank you. Let's go have something.
Thank you.